Hey everybody, Kelly here from Psych Tech. Just wanted to give a quick content warning about this week's episode of Psych Tech. We are talking about topics related to sexual violence. So if you've got little ones in the car or you think this topic might be difficult for you, you might want to sit out this episode.
This is Jane McGonigal, the author of Super Better and a big fan of the Psych Tech podcast. You're listening to Psych Tech Podcast, where you will get the future of psychology and technology.
Hey everybody, and welcome to Psych Tech, the psychology and technology podcast. I am Kelly Dunlap, and my co-host, as always, is Josue Cardona. How's it going, Josue?
Hey, Kelly.
But you're not...
That's it. That's all I got.
You're just done.
No, I'm great, actually. I'm fantastic. I just didn't know if you were asking for real, if you wanted to know,
or just introducing. I always genuinely want to know how you feel.
Okay, well, I'm doing great today.
Good. You got your new VR set, and you are a happy camper.
Listen, yeah. That's it. That's got to be it. Now that I have virtual reality, everything else is okay.
So we're actually not talking about virtual reality, but I'm sure that will come up in a later podcast once Josue gets some more experience, and maybe I get my hands on one too. So stay tuned.
I may randomly just bring up VR because that's all I think about now.
Because that's what you do. That's like your Josue VR Cardona.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So there's been a lot of interesting things moving and shaking in the news lately. And I'm sure.
No, there's only one thing that's been on the news lately.
Is it VR?
No, it wasn't VR.
No. Unless you've been living under a really, really deep rock, the presidential election for the 2016 is going, and it's not a particular pretty election cycle this time around.
I'm so glad it's just a couple weeks away.
I'm glad it's almost over. I think I'm kind of burned. I'm kind of burned out. So two candidates, the Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton and the Republican nominee Donald Trump. And I would love to do a political podcast, but that's not the point. That's not this week. But it is relevant because what we're talking about this week has to do with hashtags and how they're being used as a support mechanism for people who are in need of support. And this was especially relevant and timely and topical because, you know, Donald Trump has been accused many times over of sexual assault or sexual, assault. I guess that's pretty much the only word for it. And one of the things that kind of arose on social media after he completely denied it and said things like, she was too ugly for me to sexually assault, that kind of thing. So this week we are talking about hashtags and in particular how hashtags are helping people speak out and share some really important experiences that sometimes traumatic, sometimes just secret, sometimes shameful. And this is especially relevant because this election cycle, there's been a lot of unhappiness, I guess, in particular, you know, the Republican nominee Donald Trump having multiple allegations of sexual misconduct directed at him from the tape that came out to a lot of women coming forward in the news after he directly said during the second debate that no, nothing like this had ever happened, and people are taking issue with that. So earlier this week, author Kelly Oxford started a Twitter hashtag campaign, more or less, and the hashtag is not okay, so hashtag or pound sign if you're old. And the words not,
whoa.
I know, not, and then okay, just the letter O and the letter K. And it was, I'll just read her tweet. She says, women, tweet me your first assaults. They aren't just stats. I'll go first. And then she said, old man on the city bus grabs my, okay, I guess language disclaimer. Old man on the city bus grabs my pussy and smiles at me. I'm 12. So she's putting out this really horrific thing that happened to her when she was little to get across that, you know, saying sexual assault happened, it's not just statistics, it's not just numbers, there are actually people behind these numbers. And it launched this huge Twitter hashtag campaign of, I think it's up to thousands now, of women sharing their first experiences with assault and just kind of taking something that's incredibly shameful or can be shameful or secretive, something that people don't typically talk about or share about, and then making it public. And so today I kind of want to explore, you know, why is it that a hashtag can do that? Why is it that going on Twitter and you sharing your one experience, and then how does that free up other people to share their experiences?
Also, side note, I just checked her feed and now everybody's using hashtag NOTOKAY. They're spelling out OK completely. I don't know why, but check both if you want to follow along.
Yes. I don't know. I guess it's more grammatically correct to write out OKAY.
Hey, these things have a life of their own.
They do. They evolve. They're organic. They do their own thing.
Yeah. People started writing OK, spelling it out, and then that's what it is now.
Okay. I do want to – sorry. I will fact check myself. It is not thousands, but millions. Millions of women have come forward and telling tales of their own abuse or rape or any other trauma that they've experienced. So a really, really powerful hashtag on Twitter.
We're like a breaking news segment right now. Like, wait, this just in. Yeah, no, and I mean, and that's kind of, that's social media for you, right? It is live. It is happening at the moment. It is raw, right? And I do want to make the distinction between when people talk about like slacktivism, right, or the idea of all you do on social media is you're like promoting this idea and you're not actually making a change. This isn't about necessarily doing a thing. This is about relating to other people and a shared experience through a very common term. And there's something powerful about like walking down the street and seeing somebody who has a t-shirt that's a meme, that's something that you know, right? And nobody else around you really knows it, but you get it and the other person gets it, and there's a solidarity, right? And it's about being able to partially, right? I mean, there's many layers to this, but a big part of it is being able to relate to all these people surrounding these type of experiences and how social media makes it easier, right, to find these people, first of all. And then I don't know. I mean, do you think it makes it easier to talk about it?
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. So, you know, I'll start with a personal anecdote. I am very thankful that I don't have an assault story to share. I realize that I'm incredibly lucky about that. But as a woman who plays video games, I've gotten my fair share of verbal harassment. And there was a website, and we've talked about it a couple times, called fatuglyorslutty.com. And it was just kind of a place where you could share the hate mail that you got. And one of the really powerful things about this website was, one, it showed that you weren't alone, that you're not the only woman out there receiving harassment. Two, you're not the only woman playing games. And three, it gave people a place to kind of share and their experiences, how they felt about it, and put it out there in a way that's almost funny. So the fact that you're kind of turning it from being, you know, just kind of the passive victim or recipient of harassment and being able to turn it around into something that empowers you as a person. So I would receive some kind of horrible message and I was excited because that meant that I got to send it to Fat Ugly or Slutty and post it and laugh about it with other players. So that was incredibly powerful. The site doesn't update anymore, which is really a shame. But I think that's my personal experience with, you know, just it wasn't actively trying to change the world, but it was a really great way for female gamers to know you're not alone, you're not the only one who this is happening to, and you don't have to feel afraid. You can share your experiences, which, you know, as we know, letting it out is a lot healthier than keeping it in, and sharing with the community is a lot healthier than isolating yourself. So on one hand, I think just from personal experience, I totally get it. On the more scientific end, there's kind of two social psychology ideas at play here. So one is the false consensus effect. So this is basically saying that people tend to overestimate the extent to which their opinions or beliefs or values are typical or are normal. So this is the idea that I hate all women, therefore everybody hates all women. Or I guess that might be a little extreme, but I think with this election, you're kind of seeing where that's coming from. But basically the idea of the people around me agree with me, and so I am emboldened to speak out even when you're not in the majority. Even though most people don't think that, you know, women should – I can't even think of an example right now.
Well, just in general, right, at any political rally, regardless of party, you're surrounded by people who are cheering when this one person says a very polarizing statement, and that makes you feel like, oh, yeah, like – yeah, exactly. Yeah, I knew I was right all along. Look at all these people, right? And the bigger the group, the bigger, especially like physical proximity, that feels huge, right? I'm just like, again, I'm not a political scientist, but when Bernie Sanders was campaigning, he had gigantic rallies on the Democratic side, and sometimes you heard things about like, oh, but he had all these huge rallies. Why doesn't he have more support? What's because, you know, a lot of people were there at the rally, not necessarily everywhere else.
So that's one side of the equation, is the idea that if you believe that your idea is the mainstream idea, even though it might not be, but feeling like you've got the will of the people behind you emboldens you to speak. On the opposite end, and that tends to be people who are the harassers tend to fall into that pool. On the opposite end, there is this concept of the spiral of silence, which is the idea that you are less likely to speak out about something if you think you're the only one who thinks that way. And this is where you see a lot of people who have dealt with sexual assault or any kind of traumatic experience, is that when you feel like you're the only one it happened to, or if you were to share what you went through with the people around you and that something negative would happen in return, either they wouldn't believe you, they would ostracize you, you know, whatever kind of negative outcome, you're a lot less likely to speak out about it. And I can confirm with that one too, because I definitely have my own beliefs, and there's a lot of times I want to share some things on Facebook that I think are really either funny or clever in regards to the election. But I also know that my grandmother is on Facebook, and my much more conservative brother is on Facebook, and I really don't want a Facebook anger rage fest or anything like that. And I've had that happen before with friends and family when I've posted something and they've gotten mad about it, and it just makes everything really uncomfortable. So I'm much more reluctant, even though I would say 99% of my friends on Facebook would agree with my point of view. That's why we're pretty much friends, but not everybody's going to. So it's this balance between when you think that your idea is mainstream, you're more likely to speak out and be more loud about it. When you think that you are the only one who's experiencing something, or the experience that you had is not going to be acknowledged or validated, then you're a lot less likely to speak out. And I think that is where we really see the Twitter hashtag thing kind of come to fruition, that by putting out there that, you know, she experienced her first sexual assault at 12, the author who wrote that tweet, you know, she is bravely putting herself out there, you know, taking something that is considered shameful to talk about and just like not caring, which can embolden other people to feel the same because they realize they're not alone. And so they start to come out of that spiral of silence as they realize that they are not isolated, and that there are people that will support and believe them.
And even though she's leading by example, let's say that I'm the type of person who doesn't want to actually publicly say it, I can just touch that hashtag, and now I have a whole stream of people who I can relate to, mm-hmm. regardless of whether or not I want to do it publicly. And, you know, social media, I could do it publicly, but I could also just start following these people, or I could email them personally, or I could just see their profile and somehow follow up with anybody that I might want to separately. And because of you know, maybe I don't want to get on the national or worldwide scale of the conversation, but if all of a sudden there's a, I don't know, not okay NYC, and that's something that I feel more comfortable about, right? Or maybe I'm someone who's I have a support group, right? And so I go and I make a secondary hashtag for people to local in the community who might want to here are the resources for you and things like that. And all of that stuff can happen very easily thanks to social media because of the way that hashtags hyperlink and kind of make that very, very simple.
Yeah, there was another hashtag event on Facebook a little while ago. It was the Why I Stayed hashtag, which was a woman sharing her experience about why she stayed with her abusive partner. Because again, that's another thing that in general, the idea is that if you stay with an abusive partner, it's somehow the victim's fault. You know, well, why didn't you just leave? And so she created a hashtag explaining, you know, why it was. I think her experience was that her husband felt, you know, he threatened to beat her and then slept in front of the door so she couldn't escape. And obviously, you know, if you're not familiar with domestic abuse like this, it's incredibly normal for women to feel trapped and unable to leave, even if they're in a dangerous situation. So NPR did an interview with her after this hashtag kind of blew up on Twitter. And she has this amazing quote that I'm going to share for you now. If we were fancy like NPR, we'd have her voice it over, but we'll just have to make do. So she said, you know, I think the beauty of hashtag activism is that it creates an opportunity for sustained engagement. So you never know what a hashtag has inspired someone offline to do. You know, there's that hope that the hashtag will inspire action. There was a woman who, I think it was 2 weeks ago now, she tweeted to me that Why I Stayed helped her get out and stay out of her abusive relationship. And if that's not direct action, I don't know what is. So that particular quote was in response to, as Josue mentioned earlier, the idea of slacktivism or armchair activism, where you're not actually doing anything. But it also speaks to, you know, putting stuff like that out there makes people feel like they can actually talk about it. And it, even if you don't actively engage, you can still be inspired by others who are putting themselves out there. So it's kind of like, I don't want to say a role model, but I guess it's modeling behavior that might empower others.
You know, over the years, I've worked with a lot of people who had experiences they had that they never talked to anybody about, right? That I was the first person who they came to and they shared, whether it was, a very bad relationship, domestic abuse, sexual assault, all these type of things that, you know, are really hard to talk about. And you would go to a therapist to discuss these things, right? And I was in a, because I'm bilingual, I worked with a lot of people who didn't, and because I worked in a system within Medicaid, right? So many times you don't choose who you're going to talk to. And many times I worked with people who spoke with me because Spanish was their first language. Within choices, I had people who would talk to me because I am Hispanic, right? So I'm a minority. I represent a minority, and that's something that people could relate to. And I'm thinking back to so many times when people would tell me I feel so alone, like I don't know, I don't think this is normal, or I'm not sure how common this is. I don't have anybody to talk to. And now, just a few years later, I could point to something like this, right? And say, hey, I don't know if you're looking, you know, if you're looking for that kind of thing, if you're looking for other stories of people to relate to, look up this on Facebook or on Twitter. And it's a real easy way to kind of go see that, right? When in the past I would have books or maybe, you know, I had this whole collection of TED Talks and YouTube videos that I would point people to for certain things. But that's different, right? This is so, again, like it changed as we were discussing it. You know, we both checked. I was like, oh, wait a minute, the hashtag's a little different now. And to be able to use that because you know the positive effect that it's having on people is, it's like a great thing to have and a great thing to think about, especially like if you're working in any type of social service or education too, you know, people come to you and they talk to you about these things, and the default is to feel isolated, to not want to talk about it because you're ashamed of it or because you're scared for a number of different reasons. And I don't know, as a provider, as a helper, I feel more empowered to be able to connect people to something that still feels safer, right? And something I could introduce even earlier on than just telling somebody to go to a support group, or it's easier than, you know, read this book. And I don't know, I like the fact that I can, if I'm aware of these things, I can also propel them forward to help people with this type of thing. And one of the ones that I really liked recently was that, I mean, that I liked, right? But that I really appreciate that there was a lot of attention given to it, was the rapper Kid Cudi.
Oh,
he recently, yeah. Right? So he posted on Facebook that he was going to check himself in to get treatment for depression and suicidal thoughts. And so we're talking about a black man, a rapper, who put this out there. And surrounding that, right, this hashtag you good man came out, right? So it was hashtag you good man. And it's black men identifying with mental health issues. And I found out when I read on a Huffington Post an article that said, that mentioned, talked about Kid Cudi bringing awareness to this, and then citing tons of examples in rap music over decades talking about mental health. I don't know if anybody expected that to come out of it, right? But that is so amazing, you know, that again, one person who has a lot of reach can say something very personal, give an example, this very simple, essentially a hyperlink, right, forms around it and connects all of these people. And at different levels, you come out with things like a very deep analysis of mental health conversations in rap music over the last 20, 30 years. Like that is amazing. It just shows the potential for, again, these are, especially when it's a group of people who is, you know, you feel like you are a minority, you know, in the literal sense of the word. There are less of you. There are less black men with mental health issues than there may be, you know, and you feel like a small group. And now the comparison, right, between Donald Trump having this huge reach, being one person who can just say one thing, and the opposite of that is so many different voices rallying around one hashtag and being able to not offset it, you know, but have, there's the potential to have like an enough reach. It is, I don't know, it's a great thing that, again, it is like a tap away for you to join the conversation, or whether actively or passively, and that having an amazing positive effect.
And I think one of the things that the platform of Twitter does really well is that you can see and you can get as much as you need, I guess is the way to put it, is that since it catalogs things chronologically, you can sort, you can start digging down, and you can, there's really no limit. The only limit to the amount of stories you can read is yourself and the people posting them. So I know if I start looking down the hashtag Twitter, you know, or Twitter hole, oh gosh, the hashtag rabbit hole, you know, I can get sucked in for quite a while reading all the stories. Just earlier this week, there was a New York Times reporter who was yelled at on the street to go back to China. And he put out a tweet basically asking people to share their experiences of racism. And that is continuing to evolve and to develop. And it dovetails really nicely with the idea of, you know, that like the award show that happened earlier than the in the year, like the Emmys and Oscars and things like that, bringing attention to the lack of diversity in terms of actors. What was it, the Oscar So White, I think was the mm-hmm. other hashtag.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it just
and all the other hashtags So White that came after.
Yeah. And so it's just a really easy way to bring people together. like Josue mentioned, just a hyperlink, super connecting everybody around this particular topic. Now, it's also important to realize that just it can be used for good, and that's what we want to focus on, but it's also can be used for bad. So
everything we said, you can flip
it. You can absolutely flip it. I don't make a habit of looking up hate hashtags, so I don't actually know any off the top of my head. I guess the closest would be
hashtag hate, maybe?
Hashtag hate, or the not all men hashtag, which was a backlash to women talking about everyday sexism.
Oh, or like All Lives Matter, all lives responding to
Black Lives Matter.
Black Lives Matter. Yeah.
So not necessarily saying it's really easy to find the opposite side of the coin as well. So if you want to understand what the opposition thinks, it's also pretty even, which can be something as simple as, hey, I'm a New York Giants fan. You're a New York Jets fan. I can follow your hashtag and see what all the Jets players are saying. And, you know, that's kind of harmless. But, you know, when you start looking into other ways, you know, there are people who use the Twitter hashtags to organize themselves, and they don't necessarily have the most positive or support-oriented mission. Sometimes they can be targeted to bring down other hashtags. It's a very interesting anthropological, I don't want to say experiment, but like watching the way that these hashtags not only develop themselves, and then they develop counters, and then there's counters to the counter. And so, for example, there was the everyday sexism hashtag, and that was followed up by the not all men hashtag. And that was followed up by yes, all women hashtag. So yeah. If you weren't following it, I mean, if you're not a Twitter file like myself, it was women pointing out everyday sexism, like, hey, baby, why don't you smile more? Or getting catcalled on the street. And then in response, a bunch of mostly men would say, yeah, but not all men do that. And so that spawned the not all men hashtag that, oh, well, you got harassed, but I don't do that. And then the response being, yes, but all women, like all women have experienced harassment by a man. All women have felt uncomfortable by a man. So it might not be you, but so, yeah, there's these kind of like macro conversations that go on around these hashtags. And it's, again, a amazing opportunity for anybody who's studying digital anthropology. That is totally a thing. And if I was to get another degree, I'd probably go after that. But just watching the way that the social movements, and they go back and forth, and they develop, and they grow, and they evolve. I think it's fascinating. So even if you're not a big Twitter person, just even looking at the hashtag, looking at what's trending, you know, what is on the mind of the globe right now, I think is such an interesting psychological lens to view the world with. Like, what is important to you or the Twitterverse at this moment? And, you know, we've been seeing a lot of like substantive kind of conversations going on in 140 characters or less.
The back and forth, right, was a little overwhelming just hearing you talking about it. And to and to follow that can be kind of hard. But if you want to go deeper, right, into that, there are like all this stuff is quantifiable. You can see you can see graphs and how things are charting and how things are trending, and see which hashtag is more popular over time and on this certain day, and all this kind of stuff is visible. Again, that's a quantifiable way to look at this stuff, but there's a qualitative part that you cannot measure. As you were talking, so many things came into my head, and some of them, there were a few where I'm like, I'm not even going to bring this up, but there's one, just to show an example of something that you may not think that it's something that was bothering you, maybe. When you talked about like all women are harassed by men, I have only sisters, right? And to me, like this kind of stuff matters. And one thing that I find like when I'm walking down the street is that if I'm walking behind, actually, you know, speaking of the the debates. You know, if I'm a tall guy, and if I'm walking behind a woman on the street, like, I immediately think, oh, I don't want this person to feel uncomfortable. So I'll either slow down or just try to pass them to not have like this feeling that I'm hovering over somebody. And that's just something that has come from like from different experiences, right? I don't want to make anybody feel uncomfortable, but then I feel uncomfortable. And it's one thing that I think about every now and then. But a couple years ago, there was it was Questlove from The Roots, and he wrote this essay on how, like, as a very tall and very big black man, he constantly felt like he was disturbing people with his presence. And there was something about that that I identified with, and it was one of those things that I had not thought about ever bringing up to anybody, like, hey, do you ever feel this? Because it's something that comes and goes. It does bother me. And it just came up. And the point I want to make is that sometimes we're not ready for this stuff, or sometimes it's like too much for us to think about at the moment. And the hashtags allow us to kind of have control over that too, in the way that we can filter out information. Just like you can create like this your own little world with only people who like the Jets or you know, or however you want to you know, frame your social media, or have different lists. But you can also filter things out. So if, for example, you wanted to, you've had enough of not okay, not because you disagree or agree, just because emotionally, like, I can't deal with this anymore, and it's I need a break, but I still want to be on Twitter, you can set up filters on different services so that those things do not come into your feed. And again, that's also very empowering. You know, like, when you're watching the news, you don't know what's going to come up next, and you don't know what's going to hit you. But on social media, we have a lot of control over that. And I don't know how many people think about that, but especially when we're talking about things like this that can have a very you know, strong effect on us, and we may react emotionally to things as they come up. We can actually do something about that to kind of not completely, you know, the answer doesn't have to be throw your phone in the toilet. You know, there's other things that you can do.
I think being able to customize your experience is really important. And you also brought up the point that if it's too much, not necessarily that you disagree with something, but sometimes it can just be too much to constantly see and be reminded of, that you can put those filters on to help yourself out. So the idea that social media is ever present and invading our lives, it's kind of true. But the fact that you can shape it to kind of be an experience that is an experience you want, I think is an important step that's been happening in the last couple of years. So, you know, these hashtags are one example of being able to create the media experience that you want, because you can easily follow what's going on with a specific topic. You can also create lists so you can keep track of specific people and topics. You can block people. I still think Twitter has a long way to go in terms of protecting the people on its site. But for the most part, you know, you can pretty much customize your online experience to be a supportive environment. And I think that is really, really important, because as we've seen time and time again, Twitter is not necessarily the safest place on the internet. The internet is not necessarily the safest place in the internet of things. So
no.
The fact that you can find some kind of place to share your voice and feel empowered, even in a place like Twitter, I think speaks to the power of what people can do when they come together over a common cause. And I don't think you can undervalue the importance of feeling accepted, feeling validated, and feeling heard. And that does so much to move people out of their spiral of silence and confront the people who have that cognitive fallacy that they are in the majority and that they feel emboldened to speak out because they think they speak for the majority. And whatever it is that you're struggling with, well, it just doesn't matter because you're not, you know, that's not what everybody thinks. This false consensus idea, a cousin to confirmation bias, which is also a good one in an election year. So
they are related.
Very, very related.
You know, I was thinking about how people, like, I was thinking maybe somebody might hear us talking about this and think, hey, just like get off Twitter or, you know, like you don't need to be there. But the world we live in now is that social media is a part of our lives, right? I don't know how active your grandmother is on Facebook. My guess is she's probably there a lot, right? And a lot of people are too. And it's just a part of people's lives now. And so these are conversations that I think are very important to have, and including like the little tips and tricks on how to, you know, not have a horrible experience. You don't have to engage. You also don't have to view. And perhaps I've been thinking, this is perhaps the phrase that I've said the most on PsychTech over the years. And you can tell me if I'm wrong, but there's an excellent episode of South Park about this. So this season right now, even before Donald Trump made comments about sexual assault, the whole conversation was about or is about trolls. And they did this amazing thing that's so relevant to this conversation where they made it look like a child was considering suicide, right? And what was really happening was that the child was considering getting off of Twitter. And there was this very – it's one of those moments where you're like, did they go too far? Did they not go too far? But the commentary is absolutely on point in how important social media is to people's lives. So we're talking about very serious issues within a stream of information that is – a part of just who people are now, right? Today, again, like next year it may not be Twitter, but right now this is Twitter and Facebook is what we have. That's where the people are, and that's where these things are happening. And I think that, you know, to follow this conversation further, if you want a very interesting perspective into this stuff, check out the latest season of South Park, because they're talking about things in a way that is sometimes hard to talk about, but is shining a really good light on exactly what it is that we're talking about.
Yeah, I'm not a South Park person, but sometimes the absurd is the best way to hammer home a really serious point. You know, if you can abstract something to such a level that you can actually talk about it, and mm-hmm. South Park does that quite well.
They are the masters.
All right. Well, I think that's it for this episode of PsychTech and our hashtag activism. As always, you can check us out here.
What are we going to call it? Hashtag activism?
I don't know. What else should we call it?
Because I don't feel – because I feel that the hashtag activism is like Occupy Wall Street, right? Or even Black Lives Matter in the terms of like we're organizing a rally and we're doing this kind of stuff. It's different than like the more like the relatable part of those things where you're identifying with it and then having conversations versus actually organizing and going out. Am I incorrect in viewing it that way? Like that there is a difference?
I don't think you're incorrect. I think this is uncharted territory and we're kind of feeling our way along. I think of hashtag activism as just a type of activism as opposed to slacktivism, which I think is an entirely different beast. But I mean, it doesn't have a name yet.
I guess
so
it's
we
the
can
activism
call it,
part that I'm like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you are sharing your personal story with the goal of making people feel less alone, more empowered, validated, and supported, that seems like you are actively isming to me.
I guess I'm thinking like, hashtag relativism, you know, like or identifism.
All right, now who's you know just making up words?
Yeah, I am.
All right, well, we will continue this interesting conversation at a later date. But thank you all for tuning in to PsychTech. You can find us on psychtechpodcast.com. And we're also on Twitter at PsychTechCast. We also have a Facebook page. And you can find myself and Host Wei in all of those places as well. So we hope you enjoyed our conversation. If you've had any experience with hashtagging things, relativisms. Yeah, hashtag isms. We'd love to hear about it. Or if you think we're totally off base, we'd love to hear about that too. And so thank you all for tuning in, and we'll catch you in 2 weeks.